You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
We're going to be talking, actually, to a United States Marine Corps veteran who served in Vietnam and came back and had a really tough time adjusting. And he tried to help fellow veterans who were going through something similar that he went through, Peter McDonald. I interviewed Peter many years ago. He had created a chapel in New Hampshire, in Lee, New Hampshire, for homeless veterans, just to help them out. And what Peter went through is pretty disgusting, and that's what we're going to be talking about. The town was just not happy with Peter and what he wanted to do, how he wanted to help people. And they came after him, guns a-blazing. And I don't want to tell you any more than that, because I want Peter to explain how everything happened, because I think that it's important that it comes from him.
Hello.
Peter.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I am doing just great. I really appreciate this, and I'm proud to talk on your show.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. It's an honor for me. And, of course, as I said, we spoke many years ago. They hadn't done what they had just done to you recently, and I want to get into that. Why don't you, for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little bit of background about who you are, when you were born, where you were born, how you went into the Marines.
Okay, I was born in 1952 in Lynn, Massachusetts. When I was a child, my parents moved up to Alton, New Hampshire, Lake Winnipesaukee. When I was 17 years old and a junior in high school, my father caught me in bed with a girl for the second time, and it was December 23rd, and he threw me out of the house, and it was snowing. And the only place open when I hitched 40 miles down to Manchester, New Hampshire, was a Marine recruiter at 11:30 at night. And he told me if I signed a piece of paper, he'd put me up in a hotel room. And he knew I wanted to go down south to Florida to get a job and work down there. So he was going to take me to the airport, pay for my hotel room, buy me breakfast, and drive me to the airport. So I signed the paper. Next thing I knew, I woke up in Parris Island, South Carolina. When I graduated from Marine Corps boot camp, on my way home from boot camp, I was in a car accident, and when I woke up in the Portsmouth Naval Hospital, I had the mind of an infant. I just had a traumatic brain injury, and I had no memory at all. But I was in perfect physical shape, and after 60 days in the hospital, because of an admin error, I was sent back to active duty. When I got to MCAS El Toro, California, I was there for 30 days, and my CO, I thought I was so stupid, I belonged in Vietnam. So that's where he shipped me. On my way to Vietnam, I got sidelined to Ubon, Thailand, where I spent the majority of my time overseas until during one of the Vietnam offenses. I broke my back, so we were light-handed. So instead of sending me back medically, they put me on light duty riding on truck caravans across Laos, Cambodia, into Vietnam. I did 8 convoys over 15 months, and that's where I learned to smoke Thai sticks and drink hooch for the pain. Then I picked up 3 more disabilities on these combat missions, and I finally finished my time in the Marine Corps, so I was discharged, and the Marine Corps dumped me with no memory of all of ever being in the United States. They just let me out with no medical care or nothing. I was discharged into the streets of San Diego. I caught a couple hops home to New Hampshire, and I had a hard time adjusting, and after 30 days, I ended up homeless on the streets of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I spent the next several years living under a metal box out in the woods down in Portsmouth until another Vietnam veteran found me and brought me to the VA, where they discovered I had 4 service-connected disabilities. My friend got me medical care, and then I started going to UNH, met my wife at UNH, and we've been married 27 years. In 2012, my 3 daughters graduated with their master's degrees from UNH. And my wife and 3 daughters were sitting around the table one night, and they suggested that because I volunteer to help veterans all the time, that maybe it was time that we bought some property and donated it and started a little chapel in tiny homes for homeless combat veterans where they could live for free of charge with all utilities paid until they get back on their feet or they die. So that's what we did. We bought 11 acres of waterfront property, and we started a nonprofit, a 501c3, and we gave the land free and clear with the board of directors and everything. So for eternity, this property will be for helping homeless combat veterans. And we built the church on it, and we've helped over 23 veterans so far. 15 of them have gotten their benefits or gotten their jobs and got back on their feet and now have their own apartment. Very successful. I don't know about very successful, but they're living a good life. 3 of them have died, and the town evicted 6 of them from the property last December. So it's been a rough road.
What was the year that you bought the property?
2012.
What was the next major thing that happened with the property? property? Was the construction of the chapel?
I went down to the building inspector, and we worked out if I used compost toilets so no black water was going into the ground, I could put as many tiny homes up for the single veteran to live in alone as I wanted to, but my wife and daughters and I decided 12 was maximum. And we built the chapel, and we have a fully active church on the property that's used all the time, and we have 5 of the 12 tiny homes up.
Why don't you explain to the listeners about these particular toilets, what they actually are?
It goes into a bucket, and we have a machine that takes the bucket out and dumps it into a compost pile, and we mix it with compost and lime. We use it for fertilizer on the lawns. The other type of compost toilet is one that solar heats up the base of the compost toilet, and each time you use it, it turns the compost into dust. Once a month, you have to take and dump the dust out onto the ground. It's fertilizer.
Why did they insist on having these compost toilets? What was the purpose of that?
Well, this place in New Hampshire doesn't have city water or sewer, and the soil type would not handle. We could only put one home on it, but with the compost toilets, we could put 12.
Okay, so it was just a sewage issue.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so you've started building these little homes for the veterans, and then what was the next significant thing that happened?
The neighbor across the street who was on the planning board, Kevin Crawford, I don't know if I can use his name, but I mean, it's the truth,
sure,
so
he just can't
say anything, was on the planning board, and he got the town selectmen because he didn't want homeless combat veterans living across the street from him. So the selectmen gave us a cease and desist order and told the planning board to not approve anything. And so we were ordered to take everybody off the property. I refused. They decided that they were going to take court action against us. And they are quoted in court as saying, the town of Lee, New Hampshire, believes in helping veterans all that we can, but homeless combat veterans are not welcome in our town because they're all drug addicts and alcoholics, and we're a better class of people than that. So they got a judge to rule that our church is not a church, so we have to move everybody off the property. I then refused to move everybody off the property because we have separation of church and state, and we have laws that they have to follow. Well, come to find out, the person that's instructing the judge on what to do is the Chief Justice of the Superior Court Judges in New Hampshire, Tina Netto, and she's a member of that group in Lee and does not want homeless combat veterans living in Lee, New Hampshire. And I believe that's how this whole legal matter with the judge going against the Constitution in the church came about, because Tina Netto does not want homeless veterans in Lee. So they gave us a writ of execution and fined us $93,447.95. Well, I refused to pay the money, and so the judge ordered the writ of execution auction. We probably had 100 people show up to bid on the property, and the town attorney was the auctioneer. And he advised the people that I had put a revert clause in the deed. So the person buying the property may not get the property, but they're still going to have to pay the fine. So there were so many people there, I don't think the crowd heard him say that, but they had a copy of the deed and everything, so they knew about the revert clause. And so the bidding went on, and it went above the $93,000 and went up to $105,000. The property sold, $500,000 worth of property, sold for $105,000.
You started in 2012. When did they start gunning for you?
The end of 2013, the beginning of 2014.
So pretty much
that's how long it took for us to start building.
What happened from 2014 till last year? Because some things happened last year. If folks go online, they can read some of the stories. They started to evict the people you were trying to help there. So it looks like toward the end of the year. So what happened in between 2014 and 2017? Were you continuing to build the homes for the vets?
2013, 2014, we finished the chapel, and above the chapel, in the attic space area, there's a one-bedroom apartment where we had the first veteran living there. And then in 2015, we built the tiny home, a single-person chapel, directly behind the first building. And that is a building that's 8 feet by 16 feet. And it's got a kitchen, kitchen sink, a microwave, a hot plate, a bed, flat-screen TV, compost toilet, and a shower. So it's just like a regular home, and the veterans absolutely love it. And then in 2017, we built the next two, and I was at the Vietnam Wall when it was in Haverhill, Mass. in 2017, and I met a college graduate that had built a tiny home in his backyard to live in, his parents' yard. And his parents wanted it out of there, so he donated it, and we've had a couple of veterans living in that in 2017. But in 2017, when the town, with the writ of execution, evicted the last six veterans we had there, three of them luckily got jobs and got an apartment, but three of them went back out to live in homeless in the streets of New Hampshire. Hampshire and in the woods in New Hampshire. And they're still living there because we bring them food. Churches donate food to us, and we deliver it to these homeless veterans in the woods. With the writ of execution, because of the revert clause, my wife and I got the property assigned back to us from the church. And as soon as this legal stuff is over, we're going to donate it back to the Veterans Resort Chapel. But in the meantime, since the writ of execution was completed and the high bidder is responsible to pay the debt of $93,400-something, the town has no more legal standing against the Veterans Resort Chapel. So what the town now is doing is representing that high bidder free of charge at taxpayers' expense, and they have brought the case back to court to try to get the judge to rule that the high bidder gets the property. And so the town is representing these other people, other residents of Lee, against the veterans to take the property. They're trying to cause us to go bankrupt. And they've stopped all our fundraisers and everything, so my wife and I are using our own money. And so it's getting tough, but, you know, we're going to make it because the Marine Corps never quits. That's one thing I can say. The Marine Corps instilled in me, never quit. And so that's what we're doing. Just for your own information, we have two homeless veterans, a female Afghan veteran, and the last veteran that just came there about 3 months ago was living on the Cape, and because of a mix-up in the VA, his medical benefits and his pension were stopped. He's 100% Afghan veteran disabled, combat veteran. They stopped his benefits because of an admin error, and he ended up living on his car for 6 months down on Cape Cod. And somebody saw him down there and knew about the Veterans Resort Chapel, so he scraped together enough money to fill his car with gas and drive up to see if he could live there. But at the time, we weren't prepared, but I said, sure, why not? So now he's been living there, I think, 3 months. I just saw him a little while ago. It's really benefiting him, and that's one of the things with all the veterans. They absolutely love the place. It really helps them having their own tiny little chapel to live in and come back to life. And one of the other things we did was Matronics, which is a universal company, has a couple of headquarters in New Hampshire here. And 2 years ago, they did a volunteer day, and they brought 50 workers up. And they built us this fire pit with concrete walls. We have service out there every day of the week from 8 until 10:30. And veterans come from as far as 50 miles away once or twice a week to come down. And we've had as many as 23 veterans. And the veterans say how great it is to come down and talk to other veterans around a fire. This Veterans Resort Chapel is being far more successful for helping veterans than I could ever have imagined. It's just a place where veterans can come because it's out in the country. Other than the neighbor right across the street, which is a couple hundred feet away, we're on 11 acres of land, waterfront property, and it's a peninsula, so three sides has got water around it, and it's absolutely private and beautiful, and these veterans come in there and they relax, and after a couple months of being there, they start talking and they get involved with other people, and I've set it up with businesses within walking distance, probably 300 different businesses that these veterans can go to, and these businesses, they can work there at minimum wage, but they can work there for any number of hours. They just have to walk in and say they want to work, and these companies will let them work there, and they'll pay them under the table, minimum wage, and if they don't show up for a couple of weeks, that's fine. If they come every day, that's fine. If they want to leave after being there for an hour, that's fine. But these businesses are finding out that these veterans are some of the best, most dedicated workers they've ever had. And so the community is becoming a part of this thing, this resort for veterans to find their way home. And I'm just so pleased that even now the neighborhoods are starting to get involved. The only people we got trying to stop us is the town government and the couple of judges. And they're doing it by trying to cause us to go bankrupt by extending this case out so long that we're not going to be able to afford to keep going.
Is this correct? You are an ordained minister?
Because I had no memory of the United States, when I first come back, a couple of men in my platoon suggested I talk to a minister out in California. And I stayed with him for a couple of months, taking classes, and he was teaching me how to live in civilian life. I took so many classes and I read so many books that he ordained me as a minister. He said I was fully qualified. And so what I've been doing with my minister's certificate is since 1974, when I got back, even when I was homeless, I'd walk around and talk to homeless people. And when I found a veteran, I'd try to talk to them into getting help. And then as I met my wife and went to UNH, it became an obsession with me. So even today, I still walk around at least a couple days a week looking for homeless people in New England. And when I find a veteran now, I buy them a McDonald's Happy Meal and a cup of coffee, and I talk to them about God and man helping them come back to real life. Sometimes it helps and sometimes it doesn't, but that's what I'm doing with my minister's certificate. And that's why we built the chapel, because I wanted the veterans, no matter what faith they are, denomination, to have a place to go to pray and talk to the supreme being of their choice to try to come home mentally.
What exactly did you do in Vietnam? Can you tell the listeners?
My base camp was Thailand. What I did in Vietnam was, if you know how an aircraft carrier works, they launch them off a catapult and they stop them with a wire rope and tail hook. We set up portable runways in the middle of the jungle and we launched planes off a short runway and we stopped them with a tail hook in 600 feet. They would fly me from Thailand to Vietnam for a day or two to repair the gear. I did that 3 or 4 times. But then during Vietnam offensive, when I broke my back, they made me an American advisor on local truck convoys. Between 27 to 34 trucks filled with surplus supplies, I would ride with the drivers across Laos and Cambodia up to Highway 9 to Marine Corps Post Levine, Dekong, and Camp Carroll, dropping off surplus supplies to friendly posts. I did 8 of those convoys over 15 months. So most of my time was living out in the bush or in friendly villages while on convoy with these trucks.
Are there people living right now on that property?
We're under court order right now to have nobody on the property. It's supposed to be empty. But I cannot allow combat veterans to live out in the woods. So when one comes to me, I defy the court order. We have 2 living on the property right now against the court order because I just think it's wrong what they're doing. And I wish the people in the United States would get outraged and tell the town of Lee they're wrong.
Is Lee doing anything to help homeless veterans, Peter?
No, they're not. They will tell you that they believe in helping veterans, but no, they don't. Earlier in the show, I was talking about the fire pit that Medtronics built. Well, the day after they built it, I was sitting out at the fire pit. I didn't have a fire going, but it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was drinking a cup of coffee when this guy comes out of the woods and sits down beside me and goes, "Peter, you're not going to know me, but my name's Steven." He's been out in the woods for over a year now. And he said, "I built a little hooch out there on a little island in the woods. I have a fire, and I come up here every night, and I go into the chapel, and I take 1 can of food a night, and that's what I live on." In our chapel, we set up 1 wall with all shelves, and 3 different churches and a couple women's groups donate food, clothes, boots, and other necessities, and the chapel is open 24/7 for the veterans to go into to take whatever they need to live on. And so he would come up every night and just take 1 can of beef stew, chicken noodle soup, or something like that, SpaghettiOs, and he'd go back and cook it on his fire pit, and he'd eat out of the can. And so he sat down beside me, and he handed me a cell phone that somebody had given him years earlier, and he said, "There's a number on this. I was told when I'm ready to come home to call this number, and somebody will come and pick me up. Can you call the number?" So I took the cell phone home and charged it, and I called the number on it. That night, his sister flew up from Florida. She got a hotel in Boston. The next morning, she rented a car, and at 11 o'clock, she drove on to the Veterans Resort Chapel property. And when I was walking up to the car, she got out, and we started talking. Steven came out of the woods and got into the back seat of the car and didn't say a word. She got in the car and they drove back to Boston and caught a plane to Florida. That night I got a call from her saying how much she wanted to thank the Veterans Resort Chapel and that her brother was now in a VA hospital down there. And then about 2 months ago, I got another call from her, and it's been over a year. She said, "Steven's still in the hospital, but he's doing better, and I just wanted to give you an update." So if Steven's listening out there on your program or one of his family members recognizes the story, thank you, Steven, because you were my miracle. I mean, I will never forget helping somebody that was totally lost and living out in the woods of New Hampshire for over 15 years. You found your way back, so that just shows that it is possible by people helping other people to make a life better for other people. So I just wanted to share that story with your listeners and hope that Stephen's listening.
Well, that's a beautiful story. How old was Steven? I don't know if he said it.
I believe he was Vietnam. And he might not be. I mean, he didn't look that old, but I mean, he may have been Afghan or Iraqi. Could have been the first Iraq war. I really don't know because I didn't talk to him that much.
Okay. So any veteran, any homeless veteran could visit your chapel and just kick their feet up, relax, get some warmth, go to the bathroom, have something to eat for free.
Yes. Any veteran. It doesn't matter whether you're homeless or not. Any veteran is welcome. And like I said, the fire pits till the town stopped us had become an increasingly big hit. We were averaging about 23 veterans a day coming from all over the state. And different veterans every day, but some of them would come the same day every week or every month. So, I mean, it was becoming a routine, and it was really working.
What do you think is the main reason why they don't like what you're doing?
Well, like the selectmen told me, they believe combat veterans are dangerous. We're alcoholics and drug addicts, and they don't want that type of people around their children. And so they will help veterans any way they can in any other town, but not Lee, New Hampshire. And they have the power because, like I said, Tina Netto's a judge, the selectmen, the planning board, they have all the key people to isolate us and push us out.
I'm going to bring this up. I know it's not obviously related to your matter at all, but as pretty much almost everyone knows, there was another mass casualty event, another shooting in California just yesterday. An ex-Marine opened fire in a crowded Southern California bar popular with college students, killing 12 people, including a sheriff's deputy, and then he killed himself as well. Ian David Long, 28. He was found dead in the office of the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks, apparently having shot himself. Do you think that they're afraid of something like this happening?
I am sure. And combat veterans are unique. I mean, when I came back, like I said, when I came back, they just discharged me into society with no help. The reason that I come from a very large, loving family. The reason I moved away without saying anything is because I had almost killed two people that come up behind me and talked to me without identifying themselves first. And the other one made a quick move towards me. And that's why I moved away. And a lot of combat veterans that happened to, I mean, you know, we are trained for survival. And you don't have time to think in combat to kill or not to kill. You kill first or you're dead. And so that's what happens when we come back. I mean, you know, it's hard for people that never served to understand, but survival in combat is not a joy thing. I mean, you know, it's something that's instilled in you. And if you don't learn it and you don't become good at it, you're dead. And I'm sure that's what, you know, happened with this person is he just had a survival instinct that, you know, just came across at the wrong time, and he was trying to force the enemy away from him. And it's not saying that he was dangerous. He just did not get the help he needed because our government is just shirking us off. And it's happening even today. I have a veteran right now that is not part of the chapel, but he talks to me at a restaurant I have coffee in. He's a combat veteran that they gave him 30% disability, but he's 100% disabled, and they're saying that he can't get medical care or nothing. I mean, veterans, you know, we deserve no more than anybody else, but we deserve no less either. And to shirk off veterans and push us aside and then be afraid of us or not like our spontaneous survival reactions, I mean, you know, there's no justification for what happened out in California. But you got to remember, that was a combat veteran and is probably just trying to survive in combat at the time, where he wasn't in combat anymore. He was back here in the real world. So, you know, that's why something like the Veterans Resort Chapel, and like I said, I'm surprised it's been so successful. But what we're doing is we're allowing veterans that need someplace to unwind. Some of them have been back for 20, 30 years, and they're finding that the chapel is allowing them to find their mind so that they can come home mentally as well as physically. And if we could just take the chapel as an example, maybe we could innovate something in other places around the United States to help all the veterans. I'm not saying this is a unique program where it's going to solve all problems. I'm just saying don't let people like the elite of the town of Lee force programs out because they don't like veterans or they don't like combat veterans. Combat veterans are the basis of our freedom, and we have to help them. And I'm a strong advocate because I was one, and I came back, and I've had a great life with three beautiful daughters, my wife of 38 years. I've had a great life. So now my wife and I took our life savings and our retirement, and we're asking nothing back. We are just trying to help homeless combat veterans have a chance. Life is too short to waste such talent as these brave boys and girls that went off to war and came back in what the town of Lee calls rejects. There can be no thought pattern like that. We have to give everything to help these veterans. And I hope I'm getting through to your listeners. I'm hoping I'm clear on what I'm saying.
I think so, Peter. That's what I was actually going to bring up, is that if there were veterans resort chapels all across the country, there's the possibility that this might not have happened if he was able to get the kind of help that might have needed.
People suggested, and I thought it was a great idea, if the average person just put one of these tiny homes up in their backyard and let a homeless veteran live there, we could solve the homeless veteran problem, and we could give these veterans a chance. I'm not saying every family would be capable of this, but if some families did it, I mean, you know, these tiny homes, they're 8 feet by 16 feet. If a veteran can have a place to live to get back on their feet, you know, it doesn't take a chapel. I'm a strong believer in God, and I believe we all have our own denomination and a supreme being we look up to, and I believe that's a positive road back. But it doesn't necessarily take a chapel. It just takes a person putting a hand out like my wife and daughters wanted to do for me, because they knew I was homeless before I met my wife. They wanted to put their hand out so that I could help veterans find their way home through the church and through tiny homes. And so, if anything, if your program can bring out to tell your listeners to reach out and help the homeless, and when you find a homeless veteran, put a little extra into it and try to bring them home or give them a chance. It doesn't take much. We just need a chance.
Absolutely. So, Peter, go ahead with this lawsuit. I'm looking at it here. You sent it to me in email. It looks like it was filed on the day before Halloween. Is that right?
Oh, that's not a lawsuit. That's the town of Lee's writ of execution. They're contesting it, and they're taking us back to court to get the revert clause changed. And that's my response to the town.
That's your reply to them. Tell the listeners what you're saying in your reply.
Well, my reply is basically the case itself, that we're a church and the judge has ignored all the evidence in the case that we are a church. The federal government and the state government have a set of protocol to go by to be a legally registered church. And we meet all 15 criteria, and the town of Lee presented absolutely no evidence at all that we're not a church, but the judge still ruled that we're not a church and that we have to evict everybody from the property. Case 0455 was a case where we applied to the Lee Zoning Board to be a church, and the town said no, so we took it to court, and the judge allowed them to strap the case 0220 onto it, in which case the judge could fine us $96,000 to take our property. It's sort of like going up against a brick wall where the judge does not look at our side of the case, and he just rules for the town, and that became apparent when Judge Tina Netto signed the writ of execution and the county deed of records foreclosure papers to have the property taken. That's where this town files a court action, and this is my response to that court action, where Judge Tina Netto, since she's a resident of the town of Lee, and plus her father, Joe Netto, was on the New Hampshire Supreme Court, but Joe Netto and I did business when Joe was a lawyer, so there's a conflict of interest there, and I've known Tina Netto since she was a baby, and she has known me, and she knows I'm a disabled veteran, and she knows everything about me, but she still ruled the writ of execution, which is a conflict of interest. So there's a lot of different things in this case that just don't make sense, and where the judges are going against the law and stuff. And they're doing it because I'm not an attorney, but because we can't afford the $100,000 to pay an attorney, I have to do this myself. So it's been a difficult road, but I'm not going to give up.
Aren't there any attorneys out there who might want to lend a hand and take this case on pro bono?
I've talked to over 100 law firms.
Wow.
And I had one law firm in Manchester, New Hampshire, that said she was going to take it pro bono. But when I went down to talk to her, she asked me for a check for $3,500. And I said, well, this is the last $3,500 that we have, so there's no more money after that. And she said, no, before I file the paperwork, you have to come up with $30,000 more. She was just trying to sucker me in.
Okay, so you have to file this lawsuit by yourself, and obviously you're not a lawyer.
Well, I did file a lawsuit in federal court because Stratford County Superior Court is so biased, but the town objected because I'm not an attorney, and in federal court, you have to have an attorney. You can't file a case pro se in federal court. You got to have an attorney.
I didn't know that. I thought that the Constitution...
I thought so too, but not in federal court, according to the New Hampshire federal court.
I wasn't aware of that.
But one of the things I'd like to tell your listeners, if you don't mind, is whenever you see a homeless person on the street, one out of every three of those homeless people you see is going to be a homeless veteran. And the most amazing thing that I found, the most astounding thing that I found, is that women, since they started serving in combat, women have a 55% chance of being homeless when they come back because of their motherly instincts and stuff. So that's just an interesting fact that I found out since I started this Veterans Resort Chapel, is women who serve in combat have almost twice the chance of becoming homeless when they come back. So when you see a homeless person on the street, every third one you see is most likely a veteran, which is astounding. And on the suicide rate, it was for years 22 veterans per day committed suicide. Now it's up to 24 veterans per day commit suicide. So we do have to do something as a nation to help recognize veterans and how to help veterans when they come back from combat and stuff. I mean, it's so easy to say we support veterans and we thank veterans, but let's do a little bit and try to make veterans' lives a little better and reach out. And if a citizen wants to spend their own money to build tiny homes to help homeless veterans, don't let zoning or don't let the town government, because they don't want veterans living in their town, stop them. Let's speak up, people. Let's help the veterans. Let's recognize the veterans. Let's, on this Veterans Day, instead of thanking a veteran, let's do something nice for a veteran. I don't want to rant and rave, but I just got a little out of control there. Sorry.
Well, you're not ranting and raving. You've been through a lot.